You know, Rita, I have met you on other occasions, but honestly, to have you sitting down with me for a full
finally
interview, because we've been trying to do this for a while.
Oh, about 10 years. So I'm delighted to be here.
In your trajectory, and as you say, you have been now receiving many Lifetime Achievement Awards.
I was saying it's become a cottage industry.
But you are pretty amazing. I mean, you have an extraordinary career as an American actress. So we want to applaud you. I mean, that's a wonderful thing, no?
Oh, yes. No, no, I'm not complaining. It's just that I think of myself in such a different way than you would think an actor thinks of himself. I'm still that little Puerto Rican girl. It's true. When something really major like this happens, I really literally go right back to Puerto Rico and being on the boat and coming to this country with my mom. It's really difficult for me to see myself in the position of this person that they're honoring.
Still?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is it about Latinas? Because we kind of do this thing, which is just like, you know, we're like, me? Really? What?
Me? It's true. I mean, my daughter is always amazed when I'm amazed. She says, well, why not, Mom? And I said, well, I suppose. But it's always a reluctant kind of acceptance. I guess, you know, I think you get traumatized in a way. You are so accustomed to being ignored and let's say, treated in an undignified way that's the thing that always stays with you. I don't know why. I mean, I've had a remarkable life being honored and recognized and acknowledged for a life. That's staggering. I mean, come on. Let's be honest. Wouldn't you be staggered?
I think I would be staggered. But what's staggering to me is the fact that the place that you go back to is the boat. And when I was reading about you and the fact that you have written about that boat ride, I mean, most people think New York, I mean, Puerto Rico, New York, you were on a plane. You were on a boat.
I was on a ship. A ship called the SS Carabobo, which is hilarious.
You're kidding me, Carabobo.
No, that's what's so funny. If you read the book, it'll say, you know, Carabobo. Well, Carabobo literally means stupid face, dumb face. And for, you know, I think that's not a good portent for what's to come in this new life I'm supposed to have. Why in God's name would anyone name a ship Stupid Face?
Well, you laugh about it now, but the way you write about it, because you write in such detail about how harrowing it was. So describe for our listeners. Yeah, what was this trip from Puerto Rico where you had this idyllic childhood, you know, literally that idyllic, like jumping around in the jungle with the frogs and the butterflies,
literally.
And then you get on this ship.
And I get on this ship, and there's a horrendous storm at sea. As I like to say, you know, Puerto Ricans are known for many things. You know, their vivacity, their capacity for joy, their musical sense. But I think the thing for which we take the greatest honor is panicking. I mean, you have Puerto Ricans who can't swim because, you know, nobody swims in Puerto Rico. That's for the tourists or the people who, you know, do special fishing things. But nobody swims there. So here you have all of these Puerto Ricans going bananas because the ship is behaving like a cork at sea and getting sick to their stomachs and all that kind of stuff. Ay, Dios mío, me voy a morir.
You remember.
I remember.
It's like you remember hearing those voices, those screams.
I remember the screams I hear. I remember people weeping and wailing and being ill. I mean, a lot of people got very, very sick on that trip. And, you know, cursing the day they ever thought that they should go to this so-called wonderful new life. So it's very vivid in my memory.
And the fact,
I can't remember where I put my keys yesterday, but man, I have a very detailed memory of Puerto Rico and my life in Puerto Rico and on the boat, on the ship.
So why do you think that we go to this place? Because you said that after that Latinas, speaking about our identity, that we are so accustomed to being set aside or overlooked or treated badly.
Success is a lot more accessible now. It was almost impossible then and almost laughable that you would even try then. So I think that's a part of my youth that has stayed with me. It's very stubborn and it stays there.
So is the part of the youth that stays with you the part that says, there's not a place for me here, but I'm going to try anyway because I've got this thing in my gut?
Absolutely. For sure. For sure. And, you know, also to this day, and I have a feeling this happens with a lot of people, they just don't know how to deal with it or what to name it. I call it the negative little child in me who still says, by the way, ha, ha, I knew you couldn't do it. I knew. Really, she exists in me. This is Rosita Dolores. That's me as a child saying, this is not going to happen. Are you serious? You don't deserve this. You haven't earned this. That's still very much there. The way in which I deal with this bad kid in me is to send her to her room. You know, say, go to your room.
Y te callas la boca.
And shut up. Shut up in your face, as my mom would say. But she does exist in me, and I think she exists. That kind of presence exists in a lot of people. They just don't. They just think it's a part of them that's much a part of the conscious mind. I don't think it's conscious at all. I think it comes from another place and another time, and she hangs around. I mean, I did a play about my life, Life Without Makeup. And I had a real crisis of confidence before we opened. I mean, I couldn't remember any lines. I couldn't say them properly. It was really bad, really, really bad and scary to everyone in the production. And the artistic director of the theater came over to my house and he says, okay, what's going on? You know, what's happening? And I immediately burst into tears and I said, I don't know. And he says, no, we have to examine this because if we don't find out what's happening here, you're not going to get to opening night in one piece. And I'm sobbing and carrying on. He says, what is it? Are you afraid of something? And I said, I think so. And this is all between sobs. And then he says to me, well, what? And it finally occurred to me. I said, I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint. Between sobs, and he looked at me like I was a crazy woman, because he thinks I'm one of the most talented women on earth. And he nearly fell off his chair. He says, "You're afraid you're going to disappoint?" I said, "Yes." And then I really started to cry. That weird lack of confidence that's brought on by this dark presence, who definitely, obviously, still exists in my persona. Amazing, isn't it? Because everybody thinks of me as a person who's so strong. Well, I am, but not necessarily in that way.
You've written about the fact that there are two things that come to play. The fact that you're Latina, the fact that you're Puerto Rican, the fact that you weren't white, and the fact that you were a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So is it, which one is it? Or is it, or they, or is Rosita,
they're the same thing.
They're the same thing.
Yeah. It's Rosita Dolores Alberio. And I have a feeling, I was a very sensitive child. I can say all of this now in retrospect because I didn't know this for years about myself. And I was in therapy for years and a very successful therapy, I feel. But I never felt confident about myself. Now, that came from my mother, too, because she was a typical ghetto mom in the sense that, oh, hey, don't make waves. You know, be nice. You have to be a good girl. You always have to be a good girl. And if you're a very sensitive child, as I was, that stays with you for a very long time. Don't make waves. Don't have opinions. You just smile and use your cute self to charm everybody. And I was that. I was all of that for far too many years, which is what sent me into therapy eventually.
So how old were you when you went into therapy?
I was in my early 20s. And it was Marlon Brando who said, "You need help." Marlon Brando's telling me I need help, right?
You're one of the few people who has
this lunatic colossus. But he was right. He had seen me on television one day doing a local show, just being me. And he said, "That's not you at all. I don't know. I didn't know who you were." He said, "You need to find out who you are." And he's the guy, really, who ultimately helped me find myself, despite this horrendous relationship that we had.
Well, no, I mean, the fact that you can talk about a relationship with Marlon Brando when Marlon Brando was Marlon Brando is still a little jaw-dropping, you know.
He was jaw-dropping. He was gorgeous. He was powerful. He was handsome. He looked like a Roman coin, for Pete's sake.
He really did.
Yeah,
when
did.
I think of those photographs.
And he was one, at that point, he was one of the brightest, most intelligent, most well-informed people, men, I'd ever met in my life. So there was a lot to attract me, aside from the usual, you know, animal magnetism that occurred with him. But also, I was very young for my age, always was. And I really believed in romance, which was, you know, a big mistake. I was very Latina. I was mad about him, but I was also, to be very honest, mad about the power that came with being with him. When I was with Marlon Brando, I was somebody. And that really, really screwed up that relationship, aside from the fact that he was, you know, truly a very complicated, crazy neurotic man. I found myself being somebody only when I was with him. We've heard that before, haven't we, with other things, with other women?
We have. You write about when you were in Hollywood, the fact that you would look at the other starlets and you would say, I'm the wrong color. You actually would look at them and just say, there's something wrong with my skin color?
Absolutely. I absolutely believed that I always saw myself as darker than I was, for instance. And the crazy thing is that all I could see was fairness and blue eyes and how easy it was for them, or so it seemed. You know, the fact that probably they were just as neurotic as I in their own way is beside the point. I didn't perceive it that way. But you also have to remember that when I was a child, I had terrible confrontations with the other kids who called me terrible names. From the time I couldn't even speak English, and kids were calling me But even when I didn't speak English and they said names like that at me, I knew something was wrong with me, even though I didn't know English, because it happened so often. I was 5. I was 6. I was in kindergarten. And right away, I knew that something was wrong with me. And of course, I never told my mom about this. I never told her about other episodes in my young life when kids were calling me terrible names. That's something I never brought home, because I really felt that it would hurt her so much, and that there was nothing she could do about it. Nothing I could do about it.
It wasn't the American dream that she was hoping for.
Hell no. Absolutely not. Now, here's what happened after West Side Story, which was so touching to me. Do you remember Liz Torres, who was a...
Of course I know Liz Torres.
Yeah, she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She said, "I have to tell you a story about Oscar night when you won the award." And she said, "You know, as you know, as a Latina, you know that the barrio is a very raucous place. We yell and talk and we laugh very loud," which is true. That's me. I am a raucous Latina. I cry hard. I laugh hard. It's all very, very emotional. So she said, on Oscar night, as usual, see, the windows were all open because it was a hot night in the barrio. And she said, you could hear all of the TV sets were on for the Oscars because, obviously, one of us was maybe going to win or maybe not, but she was going to be announced. And she said, it was noisy until Rock Hudson went on for the Best Featured Supporting Actress. And she said that entire neighborhood turned to dead silence. She says she remembers thinking, wow, they're really paying attention. And when Rock Hudson announced my name, there was such screaming and yelling, going to the windows, which were open anyway, and she did it, coño, se la comió, whoa, she did it. And I started to cry when she told me the story. And I said to Liz, you know what they were really saying? We did it. We did it. And that inspired a lot of people who are now, you know, rather big stars. I know Jennifer Lopez is certainly one of them, Rosie Perez. Because now I'm known as La Pionera, which still makes me laugh because I don't see myself that way.
As a pioneer, really?
Well,
my gosh, you were a pioneer.
I get ultra modest, and I always get very I get shy when people say things like that to me. And yes, they do say things like that. And yes, I do immensely appreciate their telling me that. The last one was Kerry Washington. Kerry Washington, who I met recently, this beautiful young woman, and she grabbed me and hugged me, and she says, you have no idea how much you mean to me. And I'm looking at her, you know, with these huge eyes. I'm suddenly, you know, 10 years old again. And I'm saying, you do? And she said, of course I do. What do you mean, do? She said, absolutely. She said, you mean? And she went on and on about, you inspired me and all that. I met Amy Poehler at the same thing. Amy Poehler, who says, oh, my God, I love you. And I'm staring at her saying, you love me? She said, of course I love you. You're wonderful. It absolutely takes me by the most profound surprise.
So does all of this make you feel like the weight of history, responsibility, you've got to do the right thing? No.
Absolutely not. I do what I need to do. And I don't feel that because I have become the role model where I didn't have one. But because of that doesn't mean that I'm going to change my opinion about how I feel about W or the immigration situation. Not at all.
Which actually, as a Puerto Rican woman, you know, you never had to deal with immigration issues. And yet you're the one who's bringing it up and saying that it is a...
Well, listen, it's still part of me. It's part of my history. It doesn't matter that that didn't happen to me. My community is me. I am my community.
And in terms of immigration, what do you see that's happening in your community?
I know I see one thing that is terrific, and that is that the community is really becoming vocal, has become vocal about it, where we didn't for many, many, many years. It was just somehow accepted. We just didn't feel we had the strength. And I remember thinking that when the Black community began to, you know, just speak out, and I thought, why isn't that not happening with us? Isn't that interesting? And I thought, yes, we have part of us has Cesar Chavez, but somehow it doesn't translate to the rest of us. What is happening? Why aren't we doing this? And then one day it just happened. Somebody just said, I've had enough. I have value and I have worth, and I'm going to do my best to see to it that we get that kind of recognition and acknowledgement and respect. And it's wonderful to see. It's great to see. Now, let's hope that there is genuine reform, not out of the side of the mouth reform.
And that's really what you want to hand down to the next generation, right? Which is...
Absolutely.
No matter how it looks on the outside, most people on the inside are terrified, and you just got to...
It's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because when people start talking about the Marlon Brando part of it and the Elvis Presley part of it and call it juicy... I think what they miss is that I felt it was very important. He played a huge part in my life, a huge part. He changed my life in so many ways, most for the worse, but some for the better. And I can't not do my life without including him. It's a huge part of 8 years, on and off, on and off, the tempestuous, obsessive relationship. And I deliberately wrote that as honestly as I could because I wanted women to understand that they are not alone. That I, too, like many others, wanted to please this one man and would do anything for him. And that one can somehow get over this. It was very important to me to talk to the woman who's reading this. And it saddens me that people think it's just, you know, meant to be juicy. It was, even the Elvis Presley part, which is kind of hilarious because I wanted to make Marlon jealous and Elvis wanted to meet me. So what better guy? Two kings.
Oh, God. That's just like crazy.
It is. It's bizarre. That's why that's mentioned. I went into great detail about Marlon for that reason.
I have always seen you as just incredibly positive and definitely one of the women who I would say is the queen of never giving up.
Well, that's why I wrote the book, too, though. I wanted to let people know it's never quite the way it looks. Never, ever. And that it happens to the best of us and to the worst of us. And I wanted them to take heart from that, that too can pass.
Rita Moreno, do you sleep well at night?
You bet your ass, yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure they'll censor me, but...